speaker whenever he would speak. He would be the featured speaker at any talk that he gave. Why is it that he was a featured speaker is a kasha. So some explain it's based on the Haggadah. The Haggadah says that with respect to the 10 plagues, it says from Yehuda Omer, it's Ad Hadash Da'afah. That he characterized, instead of saying Dam Sardeh, Kinem Arav, Never Shin, etc., naming them one by one, he grouped them into this groupings of 3, 3, and 4, Tzad Hadash Bachab. What's special about the fact that he did the Tzad Hadash Bachab? What was special was that he was shortening the makos into 5 seconds. The Tzad Hadash Bachab. You don't even have to say Dam Sfardei Akinim, etc. All you gotta do is say the Tzad Hadash Bachab, and even Yosef the Kriya of the 10 makos. And what's special about that? What's special is he was very short. He was brief. So that's it. That's my introduction for Rabbi Schechter. I'm doing a short introduction that Rabbi Schechter has a full amount of time until 9:30 Maariv. He can go later if he wants to. The people need to daven Maariv. We'll go daven Maariv. And so we can enjoy the beautiful Torah that his father has shared with the world. And now his son, thank God, is sharing the same sweet Torah with all of us in West Hempstead. And he's popularized because of the internet shirim that all of us are so familiar with. So without further ado.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I have to say, you are extremely persistent in arranging the shirim. So thank you. I know I was not so good in responding to your emails. Baruch Hashem, we were away at a simcha in Eretz Yisrael. My oldest nephew got married this past week. So that was a big simcha. And I'm happy to be here this evening. What I'd like to do tonight is, I was told that the 9:30 Maariv is the hard stop. That's what I was told. But let's try to get through as much as we possibly can. We're going to do some halacha, and we'll try to fit in some hashkafa as well, so that we can have a nice balance in the shiur this evening and give us some different points to think about throughout the course of Leil HaSeder. Let us begin with the mitzvos halayla. What are the mitzvos on the night of the Seder, and how are we meant to observe them? So we begin by looking in the Psukim and Chumash. And when you look through exactly how the Torah describes one is supposed to experience Leil HaSeder, we are told that there are 3 critical components. We all know Pesach, Matzah, Umar. And we mention all 3 of those in the Haggadah. We talk about them. Now, what is the objective of these 3 mitzvos? Pesach, Matzah, Umar. So Karban Pesach, Bezman, Shebeis HaMikdash, Ayakayim. When we had a Beis HaMikdash, obviously the reason was to remind us of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hika kol b'chor be'eretz Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu murdered all of the firstborns in Mitzrayim. However, es b'chorenu hitzil, he saved our firstborns, and we were not a part of that terrible destruction that took place in Mitzrayim. And as a commemoration to that, we now have the Karban Pesach that is supposed to be brought to remind us of that great event, of that incredible miracle. Number 2, we have the mitzvah of matzah. And there the Gemara says the reason why is because this is what the Jewish community ate on their way out of Mitzrayim. B'chipazon, when they were in a rush and they weren't able to have the regular bread that is normally consumed, they resorted to having the matzah. And finally, we have the maror, which as we know is to remind us of the terrible oppression, of the slavery, of the bondage that we went through in Mitzrayim. As we know today, bizman she'ein beis hamikdash kayim, when unfortunately we do not have the opportunity to experience Pesach the way it's supposed to be celebrated, we do not have the Karban Pesach, which really is the highlight of the Seder. Ein maftirin achar Pesach afikoman means, when you have a Beis HaMikdash and you have a Karban Pesach, that is the centerpiece, that is the focus of the entire Seder. That's where everything really culminates in that last kazayas of Karban Pesach that we eat. So today that we do not have that, we now have a substitute in its place, which is what we refer to as the afikoman. The very end of the meal, when we have the matzah, is supposed to be in place of what used to be the highlight, which was the Karban Pesach. What is the story with the maror? So if you look in the Sukkim, the Torah says, al matzos and maror yochlu. We have an obligation to eat a Karban Pesach. And along with the Karban Pesach, we have to eat the maror. That's supposed to be in some way a supplement to the eating of the Karban Pesach. And today that we don't have a Karban Pesach, our obligation of eating maror is also not as biblical as it used to be, and this is only a din midrabanan to eat maror today as a zecher to what used to be in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. What's the story with matzah bezman hazeh? So there the Gemara says, well, we have 2 psukim. On the one hand, the Gemara says We have a pasuk that says al matzos umrorim yochluhu, which seems to indicate that the Karban Pesach is contingent with the matzah and the maror. So at a time when you don't have Karban Pesach, you also should not have an obligation to eat matzah or maror. However, we have a second pasuk where the Torah tells us, am I talking too quickly? Just want to get through as much as we can. So we have a second pasuk where we're told about erev tochlu matzos, and there the Torah describes the obligation to eat matzah as being something that stands alone, that is an individual obligation outside of the obligation of eating Karban Pesach, and therefore we assume, even today, when we do not have a Beis HaMikdash, and we don't have the opportunity to have a Karban Pesach, and Maror is not a strict obligation today, it is only Midrabanan, we still assume that the obligation of Matzah is a Mitzvah Midaraisa. On top of that, we have a final Mitzvah of the evening, that is to drink the Dalet Kosos, and obviously that is only Midrabanan. The Chachamim instituted that as a way of expressing our joy and our gratitude and our celebration over the fact that we were redeemed from Mitzrayim so many centuries, so many years ago, we now have the obligation to drink 4 cups of wine as a toast to try to show how happy we are over the fact that we are now considered to be B'nai Chorin. Now the Gemara describes what it is that we have at the Seder. However, the Gemara never speaks about a Ka'ara. We are all familiar that we have a plate, a Seder plate, but the Gemara never really talks about that. So what is supposed to be on our Ka'ara today? This has been the Minhag Yisrael for many, many generations, that we have a Seder plate. And what is it that we put on the plate, and why is it that they are there? Number one, we put Maror on the Seder plate, and the reason why is because everybody has an obligation to eat Maror. It's a mitzvah midrabanan, as we mentioned, and therefore you put it on the Seder plate, that it should be available to everyone who is going to participate in our Seder. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, obviously one of the things that they used to have in the middle of the table was the Karban Pesach. That is supposed to be what we all look forward to. That really is the celebration of the evening, is the eating of the Karban Pesach. Today that we do not have that, we want to make some sort of reminder to those days of Karban Pesach. We also want to remind ourselves of the second Karban that used to be brought in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, which was referred to as a Karban Chagiga. So you have every year on Pesach a Karban Pesach. You also have, before every Yom Tov, the opportunity to bring a Karban Chagiga. And as a result of the fact that we are missing both of these opportunities, both the Karban Pesach and the Karban Chagiga, therefore we have two cooked or broiled items that we put onto the Seder plate, which are supposed to be reminiscent of the fact that we have a Karban Pesach and a Karban Chagiga that we do not have today. Now, you go into many stores, and when they sell the items for the Ka'ara, they have a shank bone. That is a common misnomer. That is not really what you're supposed to put on the Seder plate. In the place of the Karban Pesach, we're supposed to put a zroa, the arm of a chicken. What is that all about? Why is it supposed to be that? So the Acharonim explained the reason why is because we're told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim b'yad chazaka u'bizroa hanatuya, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out with an outstretched arm. And as a commemoration to that, we're supposed to have a zeroa, which is that part of the chicken, we're supposed to put that onto the Seder plate to remind us of that aspect of the great miracle of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It is supposed to be roasted, and the reason for that is because in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, they used to have a Karban Pesach that was roasted. It was not able to be cooked in some other way, it had to be roasted, and therefore we assume that this is what's supposed to be done with the zeroa as well. The second thing that we put on the Seder plate in commemoration of this Karban is a beitza, is an egg. What does that come from? Why do we have an egg? How does that highlight the Karban Pesach that obviously was not made from eggs? That was obviously an animal. So how do we commemorate the Karban Chagiga with an egg? Anybody know why is that? What? So the Achronim say the reason why is because an egg is really a Michael Avelin. When unfortunately you have a person who is in Avelus, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. When a person is in Avelus, unfortunately, so we know that we serve the customers, that we serve things that are round, in order to highlight the fact that the world is a Galgal HaChozer Ba'olam. We have a cycle of life. Sometimes people are born. Unfortunately, sometimes people pass away. And this is the cycle of life. Life continues to move on. You know, I just said the other day, I had an amazing experience in Eretz Israel. You know, sometimes these things only happen in Israel. They just don't happen in America. So I landed in Israel on Thursday evening, and Friday morning, my wife and I decided we should go down to Basikin in the Old City. So we went on our way walking back to the car at 7 o'clock in the morning, somebody honks at me, and he says, Rabbi Schechter, are you leaving or are you coming? I said, what do you need? What am I answering your question to? So he says, well, if you're going to daven, I would love for you to join us at the Kotel now. I said, well, we just finished, but what do you need? So he says, well, my nephew is putting on tefillin, and I'd love for you to join us and help him put on his tefillin. So I thought it was a little strange. First of all, who is your nephew, and why are you asking me to come help him put on his tefillin? It turns out this was the youngest child of Ari Ful, who was putting on his tefillin this Friday morning, and unfortunately his father is not here. It's Arenu Harav. His father was killed in a terror attack a few months ago, and he was a great hero of the Jewish people and a great person. And his youngest son was putting on his tefillin, and it was a very emotional time for the family, and it was a great privilege to be there and to witness it and to be a part of it. But I was thinking a lot about this. As I was preparing this year while I was in Israel this week, I was thinking a lot about the Galgal HaChozer Ba'olam. This is life. And it's amazing that in the year since he has passed away, he already married off a daughter since his passing, and now he has a son who's becoming a bar mitzvah, and this is what happens in life. And unfortunately, some people go through tremendous hardship and great tragedy in life, but at the same time, life somehow has its way of moving and continuing to go through its course. And that really is what we try to highlight when we give an avel the round foods. We give them bagels, we give them eggs, to try to show that life will continue to move, and life will continue to give you other experiences and other opportunities, and that really is what life is supposed to be all about. So this is the reason why we now have the beitza on the ka'ara. This is why we now have an egg placed onto the Seder plate in order to remind us that, yes, it's true, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and it's a very painful reality to all of us, but at the same time, we understand that life moves in circles, and life has cycles. And therefore, as a result of that, we remind ourselves on the night of the Seder, as much as we are in a state of avelus, we remind ourselves that there will be a time when we will come back and be in Eretz Yisrael and be in Yerushalayim once again and have the opportunity to celebrate with a Karban Pesach and a Karban Chagiga the way Pesach is really supposed to be celebrated. The Shulchan Aruch suggests as well that perhaps another reason why we use a beitza is because the Aramaic word for beitza is beya. And in Aramaic, leva'i also means to request. So we take the opportunity on the night of the Seder as we remind ourselves of the fact that we do not have the Seder being run the way it's supposed to be. We take this as an opportunity to remind ourselves that this should also be used as a chance to daven, as a chance to request that which we look forward to, that which we need. And therefore we now have the Beitza being situated on the Ka'ara as well. The next item that we find on the Ka'ara is obviously the Karpas. And the reason why we do that, says the Gemara, is Kadeshi Yishalu Hatinokos. There really is no other reason why we have karpas on Leil HaSeder, and the only reason for doing so is because we want that the children should be engaged. We want that the children should be understanding of what it is that's going on throughout the night, and that is why we do it, which is later on going to be dipped in the salt water, and that is the objective of the karpas, is simply to keep the children engaged and to make them understand that there are many things that are different about the evening of the Seder, which makes it very unique from any other evening throughout the course of the year. And finally, we also put the charoses on the table. And that is, says the Gemara, the reason why we do that is because it reminds us of the cement. It reminds us of the terrible avoda, the oppression that took place in the times of our forefathers in Mitzrayim. Now, the Mishnah then tells us, when it comes to Erev Pesach, what are we supposed to do? And this is a halacha that we need to be aware of, because it's not only a Mishnah, it's not only a Gemara, it's also quoted the halacha in Shulchan Aruch as well. So we look at the Gemara Pesachim Daf Tzadi Tes. Let's look at number Aleph. Arvei Pesachim Samach Lemincha. When you have Erev Pesach every year, so we're all hungry. Why are we so hungry? It's not only because we have nothing to eat. It's very hard. We're not allowed to eat chametz in the house. Nobody's going to eat matzah in the house. So what are we supposed to eat? Well, you could fill yourself up on other things, and yet we don't do it. Why do we not do it? Says the Gemara. When it comes to Erev Pesach, a person really is not supposed to be eating throughout the afternoon of Erev Pesach. Why? Rashi explains, because we want that everybody should be excited about eating the matzah on the night of the Seder. If you're going to come into Leil HaSeder and you're going to be full from whatever it is that you've been eating all day long, you are not going to have an appetite to then eat the matzah. And therefore, says Rashi, explaining what the Gemara teaches us, one should be careful not to have too much food on Erev Pesach, even if it's going to be permissible food, which is fruits, vegetables, salmon, chicken, all kinds of different things. You're not supposed to have that because we want to make sure that people have an appetite when it comes to Leil HaSeder. At the same time, the Shulchan Aruch also quotes the other half of that statement, and that is, when is one allowed to start the Seder? When is one allowed to begin all of the mitzvahs halayda that we need to do? So let's look at the Shulchan Aruch number Beis, Siman Tafayin Beis, and there he says, Yiyah Shulchan Aruch mi ba'od yom. Our table should be set before we come home. My father, I remember as a child, every year, you know, I assume the kids in our family are no different than the kids in anyone else in the room's family. So when we came home from davening on Leil HaSeder, everyone fought about where they're sitting, and which chair you're going to get, and whose pillows we're using. This only happened in our house? I assume it happens in all of our homes, and my father every year would get so annoyed. He would say, why don't we fight about this all afternoon? How can we have to wait till we come home after Maariv when we're all ready to have the Seder? Now everyone's moving the chairs around and setting everything up. So the Shulchan Aruch says we should make sure that our homes are all ready before the Seder begins. And here the Shulchan Aruch writes, Yiyah Shulchano Aruch Mibod Yom. Not just should we know where everybody's sitting, which I'd encourage my children to make place cards. This way we don't have to fight about where we're sitting. It's clear. Everybody knows exactly where they're supposed to be seated. All the guests know where they're supposed to go. So here the Shulchan Aruch says there's a real reason why we should be set up before. And the question is why? The Beis Yosef there discusses, what is the reason why we're supposed to have a setup in advance before we come home? So the obvious reason is, number one, that we shouldn't waste time. It's already late. We don't want children falling asleep. And if you're going to have so much lag time from the first moment, from the first opportunity when you get home to begin the Seder, perhaps the children are going to get involved in other things, they're going to get distracted, and then we are not going to be able to carry their attention. So that's the basic reason number one. The Aruch HaShulchan says no, it goes far beyond that, and that is, when is it that you would ever go to a lavish meal? When would you ever show up at a wedding and everybody's serving very fancy food? Do you think the waiters and the waitresses would start coming around and setting the table while everybody's there? Obviously, everything is set up in advance. That is the way that we act when we're going to something that is of higher quality, something that is a lavish and expensive meal and a spread that we are all anticipating. It is set up before we get there, and therefore the Aruch HaShulchan writes, if we're trying to express our sense of Zman Chavruseinu, of the fact that we are a free people and we're excited about the fact that we're sitting around the table and we feel like kings and we bring out all the silver and the gold and we're all excited about that, then the Aruch HaShulchan says, along with that should also come the fact that our table is set before we get there. Don't start coming to the table now and then set it as you sit down. That would not be an expression of Zman Chavruseinu. So that's halacha number one. Shulchan Aruch says, you should not eat on Erev Pesach. You should set the table on Erev Pesach. This way when you come home from shul, you don't have to start scrambling and wondering where everyone's going to sit, how they're going to be seated. You should have all of that arranged in advance. Let's continue in the Shulchan Aruch, and it says, you should wait to eat ad miyad shetefsha. Afim hu bebeis hamedrish yakum. Even if you're in the Beis Medrash and you're learning, you should stop your learning to come home and make sure that you are going to have the Seder together with your family. Bipnei shemitzvah lemaher le'echol, because you should try to eat as soon as possible. Bishvil ha-tinoka shelo yishnu. We don't want the children falling asleep. We don't want them getting distracted. Aval lo yomar kiddush ad shetefsha. One is not allowed to say kiddush until it is dark outside, which is a very curious statement. We are all familiar with the idea of Tosefes Shabbos. I very much enjoy making early Shabbos in the summer. My kids, I don't want to go to shul with them at 7:45, 8 o'clock. It's much easier for us to make Shabbos at 6:15. Even though it's still light outside. So the Gemara says in Brachas Daf Chav Zayin, Rav Tzali Shel Shabbos Be'erev Shabbos. The Gemara says that Rav used to daven Friday night davening on Friday afternoon. Now, how did he do that? How could it be? So the Gemara says, it seems from here that there's a concept of Tosefes Shabbos. You're able to add on to Shabbos, even though clearly you look outside, it's not Shabbos yet, but we assume that there is a concept of Tosefes Shabbos. So Tosis writes there, Himsachim Daf Tzadi Tes. Although it is true that we do have a concept of Tosefes Shabbos, Here, when it comes to Pesach, one has to wait until nightfall in order to fulfill all of the mitzvahs halayla. Why is that the case? Because the pasuk says, "Va'achlu es habasar ba'layla hazeh." You have to eat the meat at night. And it says, "Va'erev tochlu matzos." It doesn't say on Pesach you should eat matzos. It says when it's dark outside, when it's erev, that is the time when you're supposed to eat matzah. And therefore, we assume because the Torah here gives specific instruction that we should wait until nightfall, therefore, we are not able to fulfill the mitzvah halayla until it is night outside. And therefore, the Magen Avraham writes, as an addition to that halacha, we would assume, since we always have a halacha every Shabbos and Yom Tov, that Kiddush has to be the makom seuda, you have to have Kiddush that is contingent to the meal that you're about to eat. If we assume that the meal cannot be eaten until it's dark outside, then the Kiddush cannot be made either until it is dark outside. So all of the mitzvahs of Pesach night have to wait until it is dark outside. You cannot fulfill your obligation. And my father gets the question every year. I remember this as a child, and it hasn't changed. Every year when I'm with my parents before Pesach, the same exact question comes in. And it's always the shayla asked from a nursing home or from a hospital, where they're going to have a Seder that is going to be a communal Seder for all those who are able to come. And the problem is they can't keep the people up until late at night making the Seder. So what should we do? Let's say you're at a time of year when Shkia happens to be pretty late. So what are we going to do? And every year my father says, look, there are certain parts of the Haggadah that are more critical than others. Obviously there are certain parts that you cannot leave out. There are certain parts that perhaps you are able to leave out. So you have to understand which parts of the Haggadah you could leave out and which ones you must say. But outside of that, my father always suggests the same thing. Why don't you start the Seder in these circumstances with saying Nirtza? Sing all the songs, Echad Miyodea and Ad Yeru, and all the songs that are not really a part of the Haggadah Shel Pesach per se. It's not part of the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the story of all that we're supposed to talk about. So he always suggests, begin the first 20 minutes of the Seder, you should start with all the end parts. And this way, you have already took enough time. And by the time it comes to the Shkia, by the time it comes to Tzeis HaKochavim, when it's night already, then we will be able to begin with the Kiddush, and you've already saved yourself some time from the other end of the Seder. So that is a relevant halacha to be aware of. That is with regard to when the Seder has to begin, and when we are able to fulfill our obligation of the mitzvahs halayla, which, as we said before, are matzah, which is deraisa today, Mara, which is only midrabanan, Dalet Kosos, which is midrabanan, and obviously Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is the highlight of our evening. We then move on to what is supposed to be on the Seder table. So there the Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Tafai and Beis, look at number Gimel, Yisader Shulchano Yafa Bekele Nam Kifi Kocho. A person should go out of their way to set the table in a beautiful way. You should put all the gold and silver on the table that you have in the house. Why? Because v'yachin makim moshavo shi'yesha behaseba derecheres, says the Bach. Why do we do that? Why do we want to almost exaggerate whatever it is that we have on the table? What's the reason for that? And the Bach explains, because if we're supposed to feel like b'nei chorin, if we're supposed to feel like we are living a life of free people, and we are like kings and queens on this evening, which is why we do haseba, therefore we assume that you should also express all of the wealth that you have in your home as well. And you should put it out on the table. And some Achronim explain the reason goes even further. And that is because, as we know, the Jewish people, as they left Mitzrayim, v'acharechein yetzu b'rechush gadol, Avraham Avinu was promised that the Jewish people would go out of Egypt and they would have a lot of money. And that, in fact, is what happened. The Jewish community left Mitzrayim with lots of money. They went to all their neighbors, they took all the money from them, and that is when they left. And therefore, to highlight and to remind ourselves of that great miracle, this is why we are supposed to have all kinds of fancy things on the table. And the Maharil. Maharil is the father of Minhagei Ashkenaz. Many of the Psukim of the Rama are based off of the Sefer of the Maharil. So the Maharil writes in his Minhagim, number Dalit, Kol Yemos Hashana Tov Lemnoa Kelim Noyim Leman Miut Sarara Lezecha Lechurba. During every other day of the year, we want to limit the amount of beauty that we have in our homes. We're not supposed to build elaborate homes. And we're not supposed to have meals that have everything included in the meal. The Gemara says in Baba Basra, you're supposed to limit the amount of food that you have in a meal. You're supposed to limit the amount of money that you spend on your house. However, when it comes to Leil HaSeder, says the Maharil, one should go out of their way to expand whatever it is that they have. And the Maharil explains the reason why is because Levad mi Leilos HaSeder Lefisha HaTorah Hizhira Laharos Derecheres. Because the Torah instructs us to feel like B'nai Chorin on the night of the Seder. And the way to do that is to have some kind of outward expression of the fact that we feel like B'nai Chorin, and that is the reason why we go a little bit to the extreme, and we put so much on the table on the night of the Seder, although during the year we generally would not do so. The Shulchan Aruch mentions that on Leil HaSeder, we are supposed to have a kittel. We're supposed to wear a white garment. Men are supposed to wear it. And the question is, where does that come from, and what is that all about? So the Shulchan Aruch, the Mefarshim give two different explanations. The Taz and the Magen Avraham and some others say perhaps the reason why is because we want to show Derech Eiros. This is a nice, it's a fancy, beautiful garment, and therefore we want to show that we are B'nai Chorin, that is the theme of the evening, and in doing so we want to put on a very beautiful article of clothing. Now my father always told me he finds it very unusual. Probably the cheapest article of clothing that we have in our wardrobes is the kittel. It's made out of nothing. And we don't pay so much money for it. Certainly the old kittels were not very expensive. So it's hard to say that the reason why we wear a kittel is in honor of the fact that this evening we want to feel like B'nai Chorin, we want to take the biggest shmata that we have in our wardrobe, and that's what we want to put on for the night of the Seder. It sounds a little bit strange. And this is the reason why some of the other Achronim suggest that perhaps the reason why we put on a kittel is for the opposite perspective, and that is when we have all the gold and silver out on the table, and we are feeling so on top of the world that we are B'nai Chorin, and we celebrate, and we have toast throughout the evening, and we have Dalet Kosos, and we have so much going on, and it's a beautiful time, let us not get carried away. Let us remember, this life is a fleeting life. This is not what it's all about. And we all know that a man is buried, ultimately, in his kittel. So let us remind ourselves that this is also Big Day Mason. It's a sobering thought. But let's rein it in a little bit on the Leil HaSeder, and let's remind ourselves that life is not just about all the fancy gold and silver that we have. It's not just about eating and drinking and celebrating and having a great time. Life has to be a little bit serious once in a while as well, and therefore some Achronim say this is the reason why we're supposed to wear a kittel on Leil HaSeder. Based on that interpretation, the Magen Avraham writes, what would the halacha be with regard to an avel? And this is a question we get every year. Should an avel wear a kittel on the Leil HaSeder or not? Well, if you say the reason to wear a kittel is just to remind ourselves of the fragility of life and how difficult life can be sometimes, then the Avel doesn't need that reminder. The Avel in the middle of Yud Beis Chodesh knows very well that life is not all about partying. Life is not just as exciting as it seems. Sometimes life can be very painful and very difficult. So, if it's only about that, there would be no reason for an Avel to wear a kittel. However, if there is perhaps an additional reason to wear the kittel, we would say that an Avel should do so as well, and the Avel should be no different than any other man who sits around the Seder table. My father, every year at our Seder, always mentions the comment of the Netziv in his Haggadah Imre Shefer, and there the Netziv writes that perhaps the reason why we wear a kittel on Leil HaSeder is because in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, when they would eat Karban Pesach, everybody would put on an extra special garment to show that they were being mechabe the mitzvah of Karban Pesach, to show how special it was to have the opportunity to eat a Karban Pesach. And therefore he said, perhaps this is to remind us of that special garment that they used to wear. It's not that it was fancy, but it was something unusual, and therefore we wear a white garment here as well. I had a suggestion a couple of years ago, I don't know if it's true, you can take it, you can tune out for the next 5 minutes, maybe it has no validity to it at all, but I think it's a nice idea. Even if it's not correct, it's a nice idea to think about on Leil HaSeder anyway, when we have so much going through our minds, and sometimes we forget about this concept, so I think it's something to consider. And that is based on a comment in the Medrash Tanchuma. The Medrash writes in the Tanchuma, Avram Avinu was all about chesed. As we know, he was the greatest Machnas Orech. He invited everybody into his home. He was such a gracious person. In fact, even when he had the Bris Milah and he was in physical pain, he went out into the streets looking for people to bring into his home. His whole life was a life revolving around chesed. So the Medrash says the following comment, Torah tchilaso shel chesed v'emtzeusa chesed v'sofa chesed. You look through the Torah, you want to know, what is the Torah all about? What is the essence of the Torah? So the Medrash says, it's really a Gemara Masechta Sota as well, that the Torah is all about chesed. How do we know that? Because you look in the very beginning of Chumash, and there we're told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was gomel chesed to Adam and Chava. And there the Gemara says that Chava was given all kinds of jewelry in order to make herself beautiful to Adam, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tried very hard to be a Baal chesed. Now the ultimate chesed, like the Ramchal writes in the Mesilas Yesharim, was the fact that he created all of us. Lehetiv lebruav. All God wanted is to do good for his people, for all of humanity. That is the ultimate chesed. So Torah is all about chesed. In the end of the Torah, we're told HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes out of his way, so to speak, to bury Moshe Rabbeinu. Torah is all about chesed. Says the Medrash further. Look at the next paragraph in this entry. Amar Avram v'dibek b'midas ha-chesed. Avram Avinu says, look, if the Torah is all about chesed, I guess this is what I'm supposed to be doing. So Avram Avinu immediately engages in the act of chesed, and that's what he's busy with his whole life. Amar le'akadosh baruch hu. The Ribbono Shel Olam one day happens to pass by the tent of Avram Avinu. He says, hey, what's happening here? Sheli ha'isa hamida azos. This is what I'm all about. I was the one who created the world. I was the one who ultimately does the chesed for everybody who inhabits this world. Where do you get this from, Avraham Avinu? And Avraham Avinu turns back and he says, I just learned from you. Is this not what I'm supposed to be doing in my life as well? Chayecha, the Ribbono Shel Olam says, Sha'ani ose oscha kayotzibi. God says to Avraham Avinu, I see that you're trying to follow in my footsteps. I'm going to make you just like me as well. Minayin. Shenemar va'atik yom en yosef levushe kitlag chiver. What does that mean? It is a pasuk in Nach. And the Medrash goes on to say that basically the Ribbono Shel Olam gave Avram Avinu as a gift a white garment. When he saw that Avram Avinu was such a bal chesed, he gave him a white garment. Now, let me ask you a question. You have Avram Avinu spending his entire life doing chesed, inviting people into his home, never asking for anything in return. This is what his whole life is. When is this Medrash mentioned? If you look at where the Medrash is, it's in Parshas Chayisar. What happened in Parshas Chayisar? Sarah dies. And what happens? Avraham Avinu, such a bal chesed, such a kind gentleman. He goes out of his way to find a burial place for his wife. And this is the wife who he's been married to for how many years? Quite a long time. They had a nice long marriage. They went through plenty of struggles and difficulties together. She's the one who supported his whole lifestyle and his whole objective of what he wanted to do in the world. And how nice of Avraham Avinu. Comes to Parshas Chayisara, and Avraham Avinu takes the time to bury his wife. What a kind man. What a good husband. And the Ribbono Shel Olam comes to him and he says, you know, I'm so impressed with your chesed. I think I'm going to give you a gift. I'm going to reward you. What is that going to be? This beautiful white coat that the Ribbono Shel Olam gives him. I find it very strange. I find it very strange, but at the same time, when you take a step back and you think about Balei Chesed in a community, sometimes this really is the reality. Sometimes you'll find a person, and I don't mean to single anybody out, so I'm just going to give general categories. You have somebody who's on the Chevra Kadisha. Somebody who's on Hatzalah. Somebody who's on the Bikur Chola. Somebody who's a great teacher of Torah, a rabbi, a teacher, whatever it might be. Somebody who's giving their life to the klal. Somebody who gives their time over to others. And outsiders look at them and they say, what a bal chesed, unbelievable. Look at this person does. Always running to the hospital, always going on the Hatzalah calls, always being involved in all the different things that need to be taken care of, always teaching Torah, always running to help others. Go talk to that person's wife. And ask them, how much attention does your spouse give to you? And when your spouse understands that there's something that needs to be done at home, are they forthcoming the same way they would be when it comes to a Hatzalah call that comes in? Or when a Chevra Kadisha notice goes out? Or when they need to go help somebody else? Are they as generous with their time when it comes to their own family as they are with the rest of the community? HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught Avraham Avinu, it's wonderful to go out in the world and have an open home and let everybody come in and be the greatest gentleman that one has ever met. But let me see how you treat your wife when she passes away. What's the mark of a true Baal Chesed? The Ribbono Shel Olam says, let me see how you're going to act when your own family is suffering. Are you willing to give them the attention and the care that you give everybody else? That's the true mark of a real Baal Chesed. That's when the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I wasn't sure that you were a Baal Chesed until I saw that Chesed begins in your own home. And that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him this great gift. That's when he rewarded him. You know, the Mishnah says, my father told me an interpretation many, many years ago. I don't remember who he said it in the name of. I think he told it from my grandfather. But my father said, the Mishnah says, Al tadin es chavercha ad shetagia lemkomo. So generally it means, don't judge other people, because you never know what's going on in their own private circumstances. You don't know what they're living through, their financial means. You don't know what's happening in somebody's house. So just be careful how you look at others and how you judge them. But my father once told me, perhaps it can be interpreted a little bit differently. Al tadnas chavercha. If you want to know how to size a person up, you want to know how to really get to the essence of who a person is, tagiel em komo. Go to his house, go to his children, and go speak to them and ask them, how does your parent treat you? When all the doors are shut and when nobody from the community is looking in, how does your father treat your mother? How does your mother treat your father? The person, the individual that the whole community looks at as the great Baal Chesed, how do they act behind closed doors? Tagiel em komo. Go to those children, go to the closest family members, and then you'll understand who the person really is. That's the way to be done as chaver. That's the way to really know what the essence of a person is all about. So, the great Talmud of the Arizal, Reb Chaim Vital, has an amazing comment. I forgot to put it on the sheet, but just listen carefully. Yeshnam b'nei Adam. I was always taken by this comment of his the first time I saw it. And he says, Yeshnam b'nei Adam asher mativim im zulasa. I was probably taken by it because it's probably the only comment of Reb Chaim Vital that I actually understand. I don't know anything about Kabbalah, and when he quotes the Arizal, I have no idea what he's trying to teach us. It's my deficiency. Maybe I'll get there someday, but not right now. So here Reb Chaim Vital says something very practical. And he says from the Arizal, Yeshnam b'nei Adam asher mativim im zulasa. There are some people that are always running around to go do things for others. And it's wonderful and it's nice. Va'osim chesed im acherim ulam im nishoseim uvenei beisam einam mitivim. When it comes to their wives and it comes to their children, they can't find the time. They can't figure out how to do it. They can't understand that that is the primary responsibility of a human being to their own nucleus, to their own family. V'sochim liyom achron leimar. And they fool themselves into believing. Shebevom lebeithin shomayla, that when I come up to heaven at some point, yivchesu lahem shari gan eden. The Ribbono Shel Olam is going to open the gates for me. They're going to have a whole celebration when I get up there. After all, I lived a whole life of chesed. Look what I did. Writes Reb Chaim Vital, abel oy lahem v'oy lanafsham. Powerful comment. Boy, do I feel bad for them, he says. Ki lo yedu v'lo yavinu, because they don't understand. Shakom maisei ha-chesed shalahem, that everything they've spent their entire life investing in, everything they've tried to accomplish is hevel ureus ruach. Hevel ureus ruach. You can spend your whole life being a Hatzala member, being a Chaver Kadisha, being a Biker Cholim, everything. Opening your home to the whole world. But it's hevel ureus ruach. It's worthless. It's insignificant. It's meaningless. God has no interest in it. If your own family is going to suffer as a result, and you can't figure out how to do it for them, God has no interest in what you've done for the rest of the world and the rest of the community. Ki berosh v'rishona yesh la'adam la'asos chesedim ishto ubanav. The first and primary obligation that we all have is to be kind and sensitive and generous to our own families, to our own children, to our own spouses. And only then, writes Reb Chaim Vital, v'rak az yechashiv la'achesed asher oseh im acherim. Only after that are we able to really have an appreciation for the chesed that is done for others outside of our own home. And I thought that really is what the Medrash teaches us about Avraham Avinu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to know, are you really a Baal Chesed? Is this genuine? Is it sincere? Let me go to the private moment between Avraham Avinu and Sarah when nobody else is there. When he has no accountability. Will Avraham Avinu understand that that is the time to be the true Baal Chesed? And when the Ribbono Shel Olam saw that, it is then that he rewarded him with that beautiful white coat. So I was thinking, you know, we come to the night of the Seder, and there's so much tension leading up to the Seder, and there's so much preparation that we do, and there's so much pressure, and people are irritated, and everybody's going on no sleep. And the first thing we do before we sit down to the table is, let's remind ourselves of that first white coat that was ever given in history. Let's remind ourselves of why Avraham Avinu was worthy of getting that gift from God himself. Because he was sensitive to the needs of his own family. And when we sit down to the Seder, obviously this is not what the Shulchan Aruch had in mind. Obviously, this is not why we put on a kittel, but maybe it's something to think about. Because it's a good point anyway. When we sit down to the Seder, how many people make a point of turning to their spouses, of turning to their family members who have worked so hard and saying, you know, I really appreciate Shechayana v'kiyimana v'higiyana l'zman hazeh. When I say Shechayana alel haSeder, I thank not only the Ribono Shel Olam, but I thank all my family members who have been so involved in making this holiday as exciting and as beautiful as it's going to be. Do any of us take time on the night of the Seder to actually do that and to be appreciative of what it is that we've been provided with? Of all the hard work, of all the people who have lost sleep, of all the people who have worked so hard to make us enjoy the Seder as we are supposed to. So that is perhaps an alternative suggestion. As I said, I don't think it is the real reason, but it's just an idea perhaps to consider when we come to the Leil HaSeder, and as we begin the journey of the night of the Seder, it's something to perhaps keep in mind. There is a major discussion amongst the Rishonim, how many matzahs are we supposed to have on the night of the Seder? And the real discussion begins with a Gemara Maseches Pesachim Daf Kuf Tesvav. The Gemara learns from the Pasuk, Shivas Yamim Tochlu Alev Matzos Lechem Oni. We are told that we're supposed to eat Lechem Oni. Now what does Lechem Oni mean? It means the bread of a poor man. And the Gemara says, Maldarko Shalani Beprusa. A poor man usually does not have a complete meal. They don't have a full loaf of bread. They always have something that is broken. Ah, so too, on the night of the Seder, we should remind ourselves of Lechem Oni. We should have something that is incomplete. We should have something that is broken. Now, the Gemara then picks up in Brachos Daf Lamentes, even though it's true that on the night of the Seder we're supposed to have Lechem Oni, you're supposed to have a broken matzah, Hakol Modim, the Gemara says, on Pesach, everyone agrees, Shemaniach Prusa B'toch HaShleima, that you put the broken piece together with the whole matzah, and then you eat that on the night of the Seder. So if you just read the Gemara at face value, it would seem that you take one whole matzah, and you take one half matzah, and that is what you use on the night of the Seder. That's what it would seem. One matzah is supposed to be Lechem Oni, the other matzah is supposed to be a full matzah, and that's what you do. And in fact, half of the Rishonim say that. That what you're supposed to do on the Leil HaSeder is only use two matzahs. We, as we know in Shulchan Aruch, assume that you're supposed to have three matzahs. And the reason for that is because we have an obligation of Lechem Mishneh. We have an obligation to have two whole challahs every Shabbos and two matzahs on Pesach. And because we need Lechem Mishneh, we obviously need to have two full matzahs, and then we add a third to have this added dimension of Lechem Oni, to have the broken matzah, Maldarka Shalani Beprusa. So that's where we have the compromise position, which is we have two full matzahs to fulfill the requirement of Lechem Mishneh, and then we have the third matzah, which is broken, to remind ourselves of the aspect of Lechem Oni. We mentioned before that we're supposed to have four cups of wine on the night of the Seder, and that is learned from a Gemara Maseches Pesachim Daf Kuf Yud Zayin. And the Gemara there tells us that this is an obligation that is shared both by men and women equally. Why is it that women share the obligation with men on the night of the Seder to drink four cups of wine? Or, if you believe that grape juice works, perhaps that's okay as well. My father always told us he was under the impression that grape juice should be okay for the night of the Seder. Then I remember a couple of years ago, my father got sick. He was on some kind of medication. I don't remember what it was. And he was not able to have any alcohol on the night of the Seder. So we bought grape juice for him, and that's what he had. And my father said after that night, he said, now I know why grape juice is probably not okay for the night of the Seder, because you get no excitement. There's no enjoyment out of drinking grape juice. Personally, I get no enjoyment out of drinking wine. So I once asked Rav Asher Weiss, I get absolutely no enjoyment out of drinking wine. I actually get headaches, even if it's like the soda wine that some people drink. I can't even handle four cups of that. I'm underage, what can I say? So wine is difficult for me. So I once asked him, how is that Zman Cheirus Seinu? How am I expressing the Cheirus by drinking something that makes me feel uncomfortable? So it's a good question. Is grape juice acceptable for the Leil HaSeder or not? It's a very good question. However, we're told, whatever you use, whether it's wine or it's grape juice, whatever works for you, that is something that the Gemara assumes is an obligation that is shared both by men and women equally. Ask the Gemara why. Generally, we assume that women are exempt from any mitzvah saseh shahazman grama just by a show of hands. How many mitzvah saseh shahazman grama do you think exist in the world that women are exempt from? Sometimes I ask this question in a shir and people say like 150. No. What would you say?
Nine.
Nine, maybe eight. Eight. Something like that. Yeah. Seven. It's between seven and nine. That's the whole story. And the Rambam writes there are more exceptions to the rule than the rule itself. We have more exceptions to the rule of a mitzvah saseh she'azman grama that women have an obligation to fulfill than the mitzvahs that women are exempt from. And one of those is on Leil HaSeder. We assume that women have an obligation equal to the men of drinking the four cups of wine on Leil HaSeder. Mishum she'af hein hayu ba'osanes. Because women were also involved in the great salvation of the Jewish people in the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And there was nothing different between men and women at that time, and therefore, since the Dalet Kosos are to remind us of that great redemption, of that great celebration, therefore, men and women have an obligation to drink the four cups of wine equally. As we know, the four cups of wine are not just four cups of wine. Each one of them has a mitzvah that is attached to it. So mitzvah number one is, we say Kiddush. Mitzvah number two is, we say the Haggadah over the second cup of wine. Mitzvah number three is we bench Birchas HaMazon on the cup of wine. And mitzvah number four is that we recite Hallel over the cup of wine as well. Says the Shulchan Aruch, I forgot to put it on here as well. He says, Mitzvah liver yayin tov l'kadish elav b'shabbos v'yamtiv. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Reish Ayin Beis that Tilchas Shabbos, Tilchas Kiddush. He says there that is a mitzvah to choose wine that we prefer, to choose wine that we like. So think, before you come to the night of the Seder, don't start scrambling. Think in advance, which wines do you prefer? Which wines are going to be preferable for the rest of the members of your family? And that is what you should go out of your way to try to use. In Siman Tuf Ayin Beis in Shulchan Aruch, which is in Hilchos Pesach, there the Shulchan Aruch says that we should try to have red wine, if possible. On the night of the Seder, we should try to have red wine because we want to remember the fact... Thank you. I'm okay. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehyeh b'dvaro.
Amen.
So Rabbi Schwab said I can go overtime. How much overtime?
What if people understand?
Another hour?
We just keep up to tomorrow.
I'll tell you, I prepared two shiur because I was told to give one halacha and one on the Haggadah. We haven't started the Haggadah yet. So people can go, I don't know, I'm kidding. We'll go a little bit longer. So anyway, so the Shulchan Aruch said, I'm not kidding that two shiurim were prepared for tonight, but I don't want to keep anyone too long, because I know we all have busy schedules and we have Shabbos to make, believe it or not,
just
and we have Pesach coming up. What?
Just tell people who want to leave that you don't feel bad. You have to leave.
I never feel bad. I can talk to the walls. It's fine. So anyway.
You're on the internet, so there's nobody still.
So the Shulchan Aruch says that specifically on Leil HaSeder we should try to have red wine. The reason why is because we want to remind ourselves of the blood of the young children who were killed and all of the Jewish blood that was spilled. So therefore we want to have red wine in particular on the Leil HaSeder to remind ourselves of that part of the story as well. Now Rashi writes, the reason why we have four cups of wine is, as we all famously know, V'hotzeisi v'hitzalti v'ga'alti v'lakachti. This is to remind us of the four Lashonos of Geula that we find in Parshas Va'era. This is why we have four different cups of wine. Rashi's quoting it from the Yerushalmi in Meseches Pesachim. Now the Mordechai, one of the other Rishonim, asks if really you're correct that the reason why we have four cups of wine is to remind us of the Dalet Lashonos Shel Geula. Why is it that we don't also have four matzahs? Why do you only have four cups of wine? You should have four matzahs as well. V'hotzeisi v'hitzalti v'ga'alti v'lakachti. That should be across the board. It should be everything that we eat. We should have four pieces of meat. We should have four. Everything should be four. Why is the wine the Shana Shagulu? Why is that more chavrus than anything? You're saying the wine, the point of the wine is to be the chavrus. Okay, that could be the answer. Sounds like a good answer. Is there anything else that we do on Leil HaSeder for chavrus?
Hasedah.
That's part of the Dalet Kosos. Okay, it's a good question. Good. Okay, that's the simplest answer. My father always told me, Pashup Shad is the right answer. So that is the right answer. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach gives a beautiful interpretation in his Sefer Halicha Shlomo, just as a inyani hashkafa to think about it. And he says the following. It's really based off of the Torah Tamimah. He doesn't quote the Torah Tamimah, but if you look in Chumash in the Torah Tamimah there in Parshas Va'era, you'll see that that's really what he says. Torah Tamimah writes, this is not just a play on words. Oh, four times we find the Shana Shagula, but Seisi V'Yitzalti, therefore four cups of wine. That is not just, we don't just do these kinds of word games, that's not what it's about. Rather, says the Torah Tamimah, what this is all about is, there were four different phases of Geula. Four different stages in which the process of Geula unfolded. It didn't happen from one day to the next. V'hotzeisi was step one. V'hitzalti a few months later was step two. V'ga'alti v'lakafti. Everything happened over a matter of time. It did not happen from one day to the next. And therefore, he says, we need to appreciate the fact That geula comes in stages sometimes. And sometimes we need to wait out the process. It's been 70 years we've been experiencing a geula. We're not totally there yet. But I believe, as I've been raised, that this is an expression of our geula that we are all privileged to live through today. We're not there yet. But we need to appreciate the fact that when you take a step back, you understand that this is part of a much larger process. Geula does not always happen from one moment to the next. Sometimes it does, but sometimes it's a process. And that's what happened by Yetzias Mitzrayim. That is why we have the Dalet Lashon Shel Geula. It is an expression of how the process of Geula actually unfolded and what the Jewish people felt at the time as the Geula was continuing to be the different phases and the different chapters of the lives that they were living. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, based on that, when a person drinks 4 cups of wine, with every cup that you drink, more than the one you drank before, you start to appreciate it more and more. I don't know about you, but if I'm going to eat 4 whole matzahs on the night of the Seder, by the time I get to the 2nd or the 3rd, or certainly the 4th, I don't have a greater appreciation for matzah. I don't want to eat a 5th. Writes Rav Shlomo Zalman, after you drink the 4th cup of wine, you want a 5th cup of wine. That's the nature of wine. That's alcohol. That's what happens. And therefore, he says, perhaps this is why, in particular, we turn toward the Dalet Kosas, and that's where we highlight the Dalet Lashon Shel Geula, to remind ourselves that Geula is a process, and one step builds on the other. Just as 1 cup of wine builds on the excitement for the next. That is what the stages of Geula are meant to remind us of, and that is why he says, we have the experience of having 4 cups of wine on the night of the Seder. One of the most important mitzvahs on Leil HaSeder is obviously Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And here the Rambam writes in Hilchos Chametz U'Matzah, Mitzvah lo diya lebanim va'afilu lo shalu. We have an obligation to teach our children even if they didn't inquire, even if they did not ask. Shenemar v'higadata levincha, v'fidaito shal ben aviv melamdo. People ask me every year, what happened at Rav Shechter Seder? They think I'm going to give away these big secrets. And it happens to be, there's a Haggadah that came out this year. I haven't even seen it yet. I didn't get a copy yet. So somebody in Shul actually bought me a copy. Not sure why we didn't get any as a family. So the Haggadah, I haven't read it yet. But I find it interesting that at no point were any of the children asked, well, what did Rav Shechter actually talk about at the Seder? You know, there are things that he says in the shir, and then there are things that he says at the table. I think it would be very meaningful to add in the things that he talks about at the table. And people ask me every year, what does your father say at the Seder? And the answer is, my father acts like a father. And what he did every year was the same. He did the mitzvah of the Yigadata Levincha Bayamahu. My father every year made a great emphasis on just explaining the story as simply as he could to all of us children. Another thing my father always does at the Seder is, you know, all the kids come home with all these gematrias and everybody has remazim. To me, it never really enhanced the appreciation for the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Just didn't do it for me. And my father never appreciated any of those things. So he always told us, you know, don't forget, tomorrow's Pesach also. So tomorrow by the meal, we also need something to say at Dvar Torah. So all of you are going to hold all of your things in your Haggadahs for tomorrow. Tonight, we're just going to talk. Tomorrow, we're going to say all the gematrias and all the veritloth and all the everything that everybody comes home from school with. Somebody needs to speak tomorrow. And during the day meals, we as kids always had an opportunity to say all the things that were written in our Haggadahs. There's no time limit there. And my father was always very careful to end the Seder. I remember I would come back after a Yom Tov of Pesach, and the first question that every Rebbe asks in school in younger grades is, what time did everyone finish the Seder? And everybody was raising their hands, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and I was always like, 11:30, you know. Our family always finished by Chatzos. My father always made sure to finish by this mom when you're supposed to be finished, the Dalet Kosas and the Afikoman and everything. So my father was always very careful about that. And in order to do it right, you have to cut somewhere. So that's where he used to cut. He used to tell us to save our Divrei Torah for the next day, but we all engage in conversation. And my father really would talk to us about the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Says the Rambam, that is the obligation of a parent. V'higadata levincha. Our obligation on the night of the Seder is to tell the story and to make sure that we tell the story in a way that our children can appreciate, in a way that our children will really understand. And what is it that we're supposed to inculcate into our children? What is it that we're supposed to highlight on Leil HaSeder? Why is it that we don't have an obligation to teach our children about the mitzvah of tefillin? Why don't we talk to them one night a year about the mitzvah of talis, about the mitzvah of sukkah? Why is it that only on Leil HaSeder we have an obligation to sit and talk to our children about what happened at Yetzias Mitzrayim? Why is that an obligation that we don't find anywhere else in Chumash with any other of the 613 mitzvahs? And the answer, says the Ramban, very simply on Chumash is, ki, because, I didn't put this on here either, kishanatik gamkein hadar lebaneinu. You look in the Ramban, it's in Dvarim, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Tes. Anybody can look it up, I'm not making it up. Kishanatik gamkein hadar lebaneinu. When we tell over the story to our children, yedu, they will know, shahaya hadar emes below safek. When we give over the story to our children, they will know that this is beyond the shadow of a doubt, the truth that we believe in. Ki'ilu ra'uhu kal hadaras, as if we saw it ourselves. Because if we tell them that our parents told us, and their parents told them, and this is the collective memory of the Jewish people, that is how they know that it is true. Ki'lo na'id sheker levanim, says the Ramban, our children know that we don't lie to them. Our children know that we don't lie to them. V'lo nanchil osam davar hevel. Why would we want to teach them something that is meaningless? And from the fact that we make an emphasis to talk about what happened on the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, it is in order to give over to our children the belief and the understanding that we as a people all have this collective belief, v'yaminu b'Hashem v'Moshe Abdo. So as I said, my father on the night of the Seder really tells us the story. But one thing that he emphasizes every year is, throughout the discussion of the Seder and throughout the Haggadah Shel Pesach that we all read together, my father every year makes sure to point out throughout the pages of the Haggadah where you find all of the Yud Gimel Ikari Hamuna coming through. It's hard. You got to look for it and you have to prepare in advance. But every year my father does that. He highlights throughout the pages of the Haggadah where the Yud Gimel Ikari Ha'emunah are emphasized. Because that's really what this evening is. It's the Leil Ha'emunah. It's the evening where we remind ourselves of our belief in the Ribbono Shel Olam, of how important He is in all of our lives, and how our lives need to revolve around Him. So let me close before Maariv with one final thought. And that is, Rabbi Asher Weiss once told me that there's a Mashal HaYerushalmi. It's not from the Talmud Yerushalmi, but it's from the Jews in Yerushalayim. They say a mashal that there was a child who was sitting on Leil HaSeder with his grandfather, and he's listening to all these amazing stories. And finally the grandfather tells him about all the makos and gets to the story about Kriyas Yamsev, and the grandchild is blown away. He can't believe it. But finally he turns to his grandfather and he says, you know, it is an amazing story, but I'm just curious. Didn't God also create the Yamsev? Right, you believe Bereishis Bara Elokim. So if God created the world, what's the big deal for Him to split it? Why are you getting so excited about that? So the grandfather told his grandchild the following mashal. He says, there was once a highly skilled sculptor. And this man knew how to make beautiful pieces of art. So one time he works very hard to make a beautiful horse. And after he's finished working on this for months and months, he has a discussion with his family. How do I get the highest bidder on this beautiful piece of art? Somebody has an idea. Maybe he should go down in the middle of Broadway, in the middle of Fifth Avenue, in the middle of Wall Street, drop it there in the middle of the street. Tomorrow morning when everybody comes to work, they're going to look at it. Somebody's going to notice it. They're going to ask what the price is. Another person's going to overhear. Then they're going to start fighting, negotiating. That's the way you're going to get the highest bidder. Good idea. He goes the next day. He puts it out right before working hours. Everybody gets off the train. Everybody's running, coming, going. Nobody stops to look at his horse. Not one person. He says, you know what? Maybe everyone's busy. They're trying to go to work. They're not thinking. They're not looking. Let me wait around till lunch. Maybe when people are going out to lunch, maybe they'll start looking. He sees everybody comes out. 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Nobody stops to look at the horse. You know what? Maybe it's the middle of the day. They're still rushing back to work. He waits till the end of the day. Nobody looks at it. Comes home that night and he's so upset. He's so distressed. How could it be that nobody appreciates what I've done? Am I really that bad of an artist? And the whole family's talking about it. They can't figure it out. Till finally someone says, I figured out the problem. Problem is, you're such a good artist that the horse actually looks real. So why would anybody look? What's there to look at? We've all seen horses in our lives. So why should I stop to look at this one if I've seen so many before? So he turns back to his children and he says, well, what should I do? I should make a bad version of a horse that doesn't look real? Then what kind of artist am I? And if I make it look too real, nobody wants to look at it. So what should I do? So his wife has an idea for him. Take this beautiful piece of art, split it in half. Put one half of the horse on one side of the street, the other half of the horse on the other side of the avenue. And then when everybody comes to work tomorrow, they'll have a double take. On the one hand, it looks real. But how can it be real? How can it be in two pieces? It doesn't make sense. And that's what happened. Only then do they appreciate the incredible art. Yes, it is true. We believe Bereishis Bara Elokim, God created the world, and He created the Yam Suf also. And we should be able to appreciate the world as it is, the way God created it. But unfortunately, this is life. We get used to it. We are not so excited just seeing the world the way it is. We see a horse in the street, nobody's excited about it. This is what we see all the time. We never take a step back and actually appreciate what life is all about because we become so accustomed to the lives that we live. There are times in life when the Ribbono Shel Olam has to split that beautiful world. He has to split the Yam Suf. And in doing so, it gives all of us an opportunity to take a step back and say, wow, this looks real, but it can't be real. Something's very unusual here. And only then do we have the opportunity to take a step back and appreciate what was always there all along. That's what we celebrate on the night of the Seder. When we talk about Kriyas Yam Suf, when we get excited about the great miracle, we remind ourselves that this is not just the great miracle that happened one time in history, but this really is a reflection of what we experience every day of our lives. And in fact, Rav Asher Weiss told me a number of years later, maybe this is what the pasuk means in Navi. In the time of the Geula, the Navi tells us, Umala ha'aretz deyas Hashem, the world will have such an overwhelming sense of closeness to the Ribbono Shel Olam, of understanding of God, like the water that covers over the surface of the ocean. Now what does that mean? So the simple understanding is, God's thought and God's understanding will be so prevalent, will be all over, just like the incredible magnitude of all the water that covers over the oceans. But Rav Asher Weiss suggests that maybe it means something even deeper. At that stage of our lives, we will no longer need the world to be split in half. We won't need those Kriyas Yam Suf moments anymore. We're going to have such a clear appreciation for what it means to be related to God, to be connected with Him, to have a relationship with Him, and to have an understanding of what He means. Just living life itself will give us that appreciation. Living life the way it is. People won't have to get sick anymore for us to take a step back and say, you know, every day I say Asher Yatzer, I have no idea what I'm saying. I don't really appreciate the body that I have. Until somebody in our family gets sick and all of a sudden life stops. And we say to ourselves, well, we should appreciate the bodies that we have. Because it's not a given that our hearts are going to work and that we're going to wake up in the morning and that our legs are going to work and everything's going to be going the way it should. This is all a gift. This is the great nes that we talk about in our davening every day. So yes, it's true. On Pesach night, we highlight the incredible miracles. We talk about Kriyas Yam Suf. Lo'osenef lo'os k'delos levado. God makes these unbelievable miracles, overwhelming miracles. That's what Seder night is meant to be an evening to think about. But as we do that, it's also a time for us to take a step back and look at the overall perspective. It's a time for us to appreciate not only those moments of life which are limited, but to see how every moment of life is such a great gift. How every moment of life is a great miracle. How every moment of life we only live based on the kindness and the chesed and the emunah that we have in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that He provides us with everything that we need. That is really what the essence of Leil HaSeder is all about. To remind ourselves of how close we all can be to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of how much we depend on Him for every moment of the lives that we live. In fact, you look through the Haggadah Shel Pesach, and the Vilna Gaon writes, nowhere throughout the pages of the Haggadah do you find a mention of Moshe Rabbeinu. How could it be Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who saved us, Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who led us, Moshe Rabbeinu did everything for us? How could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu is not mentioned in the storyline at all? And the Vilna Gaon writes, the answer is very simple. We don't mention Moshe Rabbeinu because this evening on the night of the Seder is meant to be an evening where all we think about is our trust, our belief, and our understanding of how precious the relationship between ourselves and the Ribbono Shel Olam is meant to be. It's a Leil HaEmunah. It's the evening that's supposed to remind us of how important it is for us to develop that sense of appreciation for the presence of God in our lives every single day of the year. Not just at those moments where we had a difficulty in the family and God got us through it. Not just at those moments of Kriyas Yamsev where God somehow figured out how to miraculously get us out of Egypt, but for those moments every day that we just look by and we don't appreciate at all. For that horse that just looks beautiful. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, take those opportunities of the Kriyas Yamsev and allow it to be an experience for you to remind yourself of how blessed you are in every moment of life that you experience, in every moment of life that you live, and how much we have the opportunity to live with the Ribbono Shel Olam every day and every moment. I wish all of you a Chag Kosher V'Sameach, and thank you once again for putting this beautiful shiur together this evening. Thank you, Rabbi Schwab. Wish you a wonderful Shabbos and a wonderful Yantif. And we should do this again. We should do it more often. La Hagdol Torah La Adira.